Warrior football. True Warrior football. True Warrior football.
You are listening to True Warrior Football Podcast with your host, Corey Kid Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Hey, it's been quite some time since I've been able to sit down and talk with you all. Some great things have happened for a lot of our guys. I want to start off by saying, for now on, well, for the time being, we can't call him just simply David Bell. We have to call him Biletnikoff Award finalist David Bell, because the season that he's had this year has just been truly incredible. He's been recognized. He's finally getting the recognition I've always felt he deserved, and he is now a finalist for the top wide receiver, the top award for wide receivers in the country, the Fred Biletnikoff Award, which is given out annually in college football. So congrats to David. He was also just today, yesterday at the time that you guys will have heard this, he was just named the 2021 Big Ten Wide Receiver of the Year. Another incredible achievement, you know. Like I said, man, David Bell is just a truly, truly incredible person. He was named the Richter Howard Receiver of the Year Award for the Big Ten. Just incredible, man. Won his first old Oaken Bucket game versus IU this past week. Had incredible games against Iowa, of course, the big win against Iowa. I think they were number two in the country, and then had another big win against Michigan State. They may have been number two or number three at the time as well. Just incredible, man. And anytime he can perform and do really well for his team, that's what he does. That's what he does. Big game, big moments. Teams, defenses know, you know, you can't let this guy beat us. And really, what's incredible is the game before that against Northwestern, they did everything they could to keep David from beating them in that game. And they did a pretty good job. You know, David didn't have any touchdowns, but his teammate had three and, like, I think he had 200 yards receiving, almost 200 yards receiving. Don't hold me to that. But, you know, David's a team player. He's been that way since he was on the Far East side with us, man. And I love the fact that he's carried himself so well at the next level. And all the success and accolades coming his way, he's just truly, truly very deserving of them. And I hope it carries on for many, many more years of his career. So congrats to David once again. His Purdue Boilermakers, I think they're 8-4. Let me see if I can pull up their record right here. Hold on here. What are their record? I know they're bowl eligible, but I just want to make sure I say the correct thing. Hold on. Purdue's record is 8-4. Yeah, 8-4. So they will be facing, they should be finding out who they play in the bowl game this upcoming week. So stay tuned for that. I'll be making sure you guys catch that. Other Big Ten news, our guy Justin Britt and his Iowa Hawkeyes, you know, they managed to end the season 10-2. Great season for Iowa, honestly. Ranked very high. So they will be facing the Michigan Wolverines this Saturday at Lucas Oil Stadium. downtown Indy right there. So if you can go out and support Justin, it's a tall order, tall task, because they face number two ranked Michigan Wolverines. And it is, that's going to be a battle. That's going to be a battle, and I cannot wait to watch that one. Moving on, going to the Big 12, our guy Justin, or Julius Brents, excuse me. Him and Kansas State ended the season 7-5. They had a big win over in-state rival Kansas this week. Well, you know, Kansas isn't really that big of a rival. No, it wasn't this week. Ah, dang it, dang it, dang it. That was 2 weeks. Oh, no, man, that was a while ago. Anyways, they're bowl eligible. They're going to a bowl. So congrats to Julius and his Wildcats. Like I said, Julius is one of the – he's actually the first Warren Central football player to go and play football in the Big 12. So he's had a really good season there as well. Also, other college football news of note. Our man, Ramir Elliott, he had a big touchdown in the Salukis win this weekend over South Dakota on the road. And it was a huge victory for those guys. And they advanced to the next round of the SEC playoffs. And they traveled to face Michael Tutsi and the North Dakota State Bison. And they go to face those guys at the Fargo Dome. Now, I am excited to see this game. It's going to be interesting because last time Michael and North Dakota faced off against SIU and Ramir, SIU got the better of them. And at their, what was there? It was like 38-39 game winning streak that they had for the past 2 years. It was a very interesting game for them. It was in the spring, actually. And it's one of those COVID things. And FCS this year has been really, really weird how they've done it. They've had two seasons in a calendar year. So it's going to be an interesting game. That game this past spring was at Southern Illinois. This time it's at Fargo. So that crowd will be hype. Those guys will be they're favored to go very, very far in the FCS playoffs. North Dakota State is with a record of 11-1, I believe. So Southern Illinois has their work cut out for them. Ramir has his work cut out for them. But, hey, you know, it's the playoffs. Anything can happen. So best of luck to both of those guys. And I hope they finish the game both healthy and it's a good game for both of them. And now moving on, it's time of the year, you know, college football's on everybody's mind. And, you know, I love college football. I could talk college football. I could talk sports with anybody. Of course, I'm running a football podcast show, so of course I can talk sports for a long time. But college football especially I love. And one of our guys, a Warrior legend that I have tons and tons of respect for, has been coaching college football for the last few years, and I had the great opportunity to sit down and talk with him about his journey in college football and things like that. So I hope our discussion brings a new light on what it's like to coach at the next level and the hurdles a college coach has to overcome in today's modern college football. So sit back and enjoy this great interview, ladies and gentlemen. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to True Warrior Football. And joining me today for this special week, we're in the middle of college football. And joining me is a guy I have the utmost respect for, a guy that I call Warrior Legend. You know, he's one of those guys that made his mark. I've talked about him several times on the show before. I've mentioned this stat before. He's one of a few guys in Warren Central history in one season to pass, receive, and rush for a touchdown on a single season.
He is a guy that I named to the all-decade, the 2010 Warren Central football all-decade team. He's been a champion here at our program. He's been a champion at the next level, an outstanding individual, an outstanding coach now. Been a coach at several places. We're going to talk about his coaching journey. But joining me today is Anthony Davis, AD, my man. The original AD, not to be confused with the other guy that plays in LA, but the original AD, my man, how we doing out there?
We're doing good, man. We're doing good. Blessed. Just literally enjoying the moment and glad to be on here with you, man, and chop it up, man. Talk some ball. As you know, it's always love.
I love
man,
it.
Kid.
I love Warrior it. Nation. I love it, man.
It's hey. Warrior family. It's a real thing.
Now, you are in Akron. Guys, the season just ended. It wasn't the season that you guys had thought it would be. What has really coaching college football, what's the experience been like for you? Because you've been a graduate assistant at West Kentucky, our alma mater, Go Tops, that were playing in the Conference USA championship game, something that you know about and have won before.
Yes, sir.
You've been there. You've been at VMI, I want to say it was Utah State you were at?
Short stint at Utah State,
and a couple other places, and then you landed here at Akron with the Zips this past season. What's that experience, what's that journey been like for you, man?
You learn a lot, probably more than anything. You learn about people. Because it is a very, you know, relationship-oriented business, whether it's you and other coaches, or it's you and the players that you're trying to impact and teach, you know, on and off the field. But that's, I mean, it's stressful. You kind of find out what matters to you because you have to sacrifice, you know, so much to be in it and stay in it. You know, there's a lot of people that want to be in college coaching that, you know, they may not have an in, or they just couldn't stay in it long term, or, you know, life circumstances dictated something else. So, you know, you're thankful for the opportunities. You learn a lot, try to learn as much as you can about people, cherish those relationships. And then, you know, you even learn about yourself and just, you know, what matters to you and the impact you can have, which I kind of always shortchange myself on, but you don't understand just how impressionable, even at 18 to 21, some of these young men are.
I get that fully, especially, I mean, like, I was around you when you were 14, 15 years old, and now here you are almost 30.
Yep.
And it's, you know, the mark you and I have had on each other is definitely still there all these years later. So I understand completely. And we were only around each other for 2 or 3 years, but that bond, the one to stay in contact, catch up on each other, keep tabs on each other and what we're doing is there. So I understand fully what you mean about being very impressionable on young players coming into your program.
Yep, for sure. For sure. Should I remember you came to that Conference USA Championship that night, linked up. So
still got the hat.
Yep, man. So it's lifelong relationships if you nurture them and take care of them and treat people the right way.
Absolutely. So absolutely, man. And so, like, you got into coaching, was it 2016 or 2017?
2016.
Okay. So you got in there. And did you feel like right then it was going to be as wild of a journey as it's been for you so far? Or was it something that you expected when with one opportunity leading to another one so fast sometimes?
Nah, man, I didn't know anything. I had no idea what I was getting ready to do and embark upon and how far it would, you know, would take me, because at the time, you know, I took my shot, you know, it wasn't good enough. So I'm like, all right, what am I going to do? You know, and I had that opportunity to be a GA, and I was like, well, you know, I don't want to go, you know, in no office and nowhere and do some work. I, you know, I like ball, love ball, been around ball. Like, you know, if anything, like, my life experience has prepared me to coach ball, because ball's, you know, like, you go to school to be, exactly, like, people go to school to be doctors. Well, they actually only specialize in trying to be a doctor the last you know, 2 to 3 years of their college career, where it's like, as you know, like we in ball forever since the jump, you know, since second and third grade, like in my mind, you know, everything I had done had prepared me to be a football coach. So that's what I did. And I had no idea what I was getting into fully at the time, but you know, everything came as it should have, when it should have. And, you know, you just learn and digest as much as you can along the way.
That is very true. And when you think about it, it's like middle school, travel ball, youth league, stuff like that. You really, it's when a player really learns the game. Middle school is when that growth in the game is really taken to the next level. When you get to high school is when everything really opens up and you see, you know, okay, I really like the game or I don't like the game. If I don't like the game, mm-hmm. I ain't gonna stay in it long enough. But for those guys that do and they make it to the senior year and like, man, I really want to go and continue this, and they go and have the opportunity to go play at college at next level, then they really see like, hey, ball is it. And anybody, I mean, it's not just football either. It's if you're a basketball player, if you're a track athlete, if you're a wrestler, if you're a swimmer, you know, when you get to that next level, you're going to be eating, breathing, sleeping that sport that you're in. Is like, I mean, you know, as much as I do, wintertime, springtime, February, March, those spring practices come around and it's no more, oh man, I'm gonna sleep in, I ain't got a class till 9 o'clock, whatever, in college. No, you're getting up at 5 o'clock or earlier to make it to the stadium for a 6 o'clock morning practice. And you may not be putting on pads that day, but you're going to be running stadiums, running the bleachers, early morning lift, doing some conditioning and stuff like that, and being out there with 80 other teammates of yours or however many people are on your team. And y'all going to do that for 4 or 5 weeks straight. And then you're going to have a game before the end of the semester. And then you're going to have probably about 2 or 3 weeks off. And then it's the circus, the carnival starts all over again. And a lot of people don't understand that, man.
No, it never stops. In all honesty, too, the only reason, you know, given our situation here and how our year ended and, you know, what the administration wanted to do, like, otherwise, we'd be on the road right now as coaches. Like, I would be, you know, maybe it'd be Ohio. You know, it would recruit some guys in some different areas, you know, some of the JUCO cats, like, but I for sure would not be sitting in my own living room, you know, watching Monday Night Football and talking to you. Yeah, like that would not be a thing. So, like, I mean, it never stops. And for the players, like, I mean, shoot, sometimes even when you don't have a workout or something like that, man, you just got to get up just so you can eat. So you might be able to, you know, get all your meals and all your calories so you can stay at that weight and still try to run as fast and lift as much. Like it's just so much that goes into it to do it at a high level that, you know, the person that's not in it or hasn't seen it, they just are unaware.
Yeah, and let's, for people that don't know, Akron, the Zips are part of the MAC. You guys, what was it, 2-9 or something like that? 3-10?
Yep.
Okay.
2-9, that's what we ended up, yep.
Did you guys have a game that you guys didn't play?
No, I mean, we had a bye week, but
okay. No. Well, usually we play 12 games, so that's 11. So anyways, when I think of, you know, all the stuff you guys have said, I mean, that's in the MAC. Mm-hmm. We're not talking high level SEC, Big Ten, ACC football that a lot of your former teammates have played and gone through and stuff like that, where it was crazy, crazy, crazy. This is smaller level football, but still really in-depth, like tough. Hey, there have been some MAC schools that go into some of these programs and knock some boys off that wasn't suspecting it. And so you guys are playing at a conference where, you know, you got to bring it. You got to bring it. So it's no cakewalk over here just because you're playing in the MAC. It's still top level D1. And you're going to come in there, you want to compete, you got to put in the work for it.
100%, 100%, because you're going against guys like, you know, obviously group of five level, like more of those guys are going to have a chance to continue to play at the next level, play on Sundays, like Bowling Green State, like they beat Minnesota this year. Trying to think who else. There's a couple, you know, there's a couple of guys in our conference that were able to get some
Power Five wins. Northern Illinois went down and beat Georgia Tech.
They did, yeah. And we didn't play them this year, but yes, yep, they did.
And so, like, there are teams in you guys' conference that are top tier, play great football. And even then, they produce great players. I mean, Khalil Mack, I'm a Bears fan, went to Buffalo. Yep. Buffalo's in the Mack.
Played them.
I mean, Antonio Brown played in Central Michigan in the MAC.
Yep.
All right. I mean, we could go on and on and on about these schools that people, they were, oh man, I got a MAC offer. Well, that MAC offer could still put you in a league if you put in the hard work.
Yes, sir. 100%.
Like, okay, so now that you, and you said you guys are, you're in the middle of a change, looking for another job here in the future, which I'm sure you'll get. When it comes to recruiting for you, because you recruit a lot of Indy and Ohio area, correct? Or was it somewhere?
Yeah, I recruited some parts of Georgia. I had Indianapolis mainly through the phone for the most part. Obviously, if it was a guy we wanted to go see, we would go. And then I had a few areas around Dayton. Some counties around Montgomery County, including Montgomery County. So that's where I was here since I got here.
So what is it when you're recruiting players, right? You need a new quarterback. You got a tailback that's leaving on you unexpectedly, going to the draft or something like that. How do you approach recruiting at the next level to get that next player into your program?
Well, for the first thing is he a good dude? Like, I mean, obviously, can he play? You know, can he play here? Can he help you? You know, relative to what you have in the room. You know, a lot of it is just based on need. Like you're saying, guys leaving unexpectedly, or maybe they transfer. You got a transfer portal now, so you know, obviously, can they fill the need? Whether that's, you know, athletically, obviously, you know, is a size, speed. Maybe you want to get longer. Maybe you want to get more twitchy at your position group. You know, so can they fill a need? Are they a good person? Right? Because if they can't fit the need, then, you know, you're probably less concerned with how good of a person they are because you're not bringing them in here. So can they fit the need? Are they a good person? And then after that, you know, like, it's injuries, it's grades. Like, because they don't have grades, they can't come. So none of that even matters, you know. And you just, you know, you fill in those pieces. There's obviously boxes you got to check. Like, you know, some places are more strict on their position profiles where it's like, you know, we ain't taking a guy under six whatever, or we're not taking an offensive lineman that don't have 84, 83-inch wingspan. We ain't doing it. You know, obviously the higher level school where you attract more guys or can get more and better talent, you know, you can be more strict. You know, obviously there's a trickle down effect to that, and you got to be, you know, aware of where you are and attack, you know, areas and players that you can get. So that's kind of, you know, the short version of kind of what you look for and how you approach it. Can they fit the need? Are they a good person? You know, are they trying to live the right life? You know, are they tough? You try to answer all those questions, which, you know, there is no measurement for is he tough, you know, but you look at his life circumstances. Or, you know, he played through injury, you know, and how many injuries has he had? You know, do they have concussions? You know, it's kind of tough to take certain guys with certain injuries, you know, and it's so strenuous, the process, just to make sure the guy is a guy that you even want to bring in there. And then from there, it's just about his relationship, finding out, you know, where you can meet his needs. Because if you can't meet his need, I'll tell him, like, if we can't meet your needs, don't come here. If you can't get done what you want to get done in your life and accomplish everything you want to accomplish, this here, it's not a place for you.
For you. I get that. That's keeping it real with them because you want them to keep it real with you.
Yep. 100%. It's a two-way street. Yes. That's how you build trust. Yep.
Absolutely. And hey, you were mentioning about injuries. I know that's a big factor in sports, of course. Are you guys able to request medical history, recent medical history from that, or is that against the law, recruiting violations or anything like that?
There is a fine line with that, and there's a way to go about it. And usually I defer right to the medical staff and let them handle it, because they know the proper channels and protocols, because like you can get some information. There's just a way you got to go about getting it, and certain people, and how, you know, there's a protocols on how to get it, and exactly what you can get from the young man. Because like you can even, if I'm not mistaken, they can have an evaluation here, but it's like, there's a certain way to do it. And I say here, like on campus at a, you know, Division I institution on their campus, but it's like, there's parameters as to how in depth that can go, who can do it, who can be in the room while they're answering those questions, stuff like that. Cause I know at WKU, we used to eval, you know, players and get some medical background when they would come up on specific visits sometimes, but there was like, it's a fine line as far as how much you can do and who can do it and what type of stuff you can ask and get. So, yeah.
What I think is interesting when it comes to college football is around this time, you know, we go through the whole season, and then these last two or three weeks, administrations want to make a change. They want to go in a different direction. You know, Ed Orgeron at LSU wins national championship two years ago, one of the best teams in college football I've seen the last decade or so, arguably one of the all-time top 10 greatest teams of all time. And then 2 years later, he's shown the door when they should be building a statue for this man. And then you have, it's true. And then you have other programs, you know, a guy like USC and Clay Helton, they gave him the boot midway through the season. He had been successful there, as successful as he possibly could be, given the chances. Tom Herman at Texas last year was given the boot. And, you know, you look at the things he accomplished and then the things they accomplished this year, it's like, oh man, was that worth it? And it's college football is so crazy with how fast these moves come and go. And right now it's in the middle of all these changes and stuff. Like, how do you tell a guy you're recruiting, you know, hey, things could happen to our program that's out of my control. But, you know, I was still, or really things can happen out of my control. Boom, I can leave and I don't have a real choice and say to it. What do you say to a recruit then?
Well, some of them are more aware of kind of the realm, realm of college football than others. And you just kind of got to assess where they are. And like, for instance, with this particular situation, I got a couple guys that I was recruiting here that I really like. I think they can play at a high level, like, you know, a couple of them potential could, you know, be a league guy down the road. And I just told them, you know, hey, man, like, you know, when I got the news, I'm like, hey, man, look, if you think Akron's a place for you, you know, I advise you on how to get in touch with the new staff. And if you like every, because, you know, you've been selling Akron. So, you know, and if you're being honest, like, I'm not going to go ahead and flip on the school. Like, I'm going to tell you what's my honest opinion about, you know, your ability to have success here and things that are available to you. But whether I'm here or not, you know, a lot of those things are still available to you outside of, you know, my ability to coach you and what I think I can bring to the table in your development. But, you know, they'll have another guy in here who may be able to bring more or less, you know, depending on who you ask. But you tell them, look, man, you know, I'll advise you on how to get in contact with the next staff. Outside of that, man, you know, I still got the utmost respect for you. Whenever I get where I'm going, I'll be in touch. Like, and I had one hit me. I was texting one earlier, and it's just, you know, because if it's really about relationships and you building that thing up the right way, you know, they understand, like, oh, okay, well, coach isn't going to be there. Well, let me see where he's at. And some of them will be able to wait and, you know, and see, depending on how fast you transition. Other ones are going to go with what they got, and we all understand that. So it's different, and that's why you got to kind of keep these relationships. And it's even more critical now with the portal, because it may be a guy you recruited that, you know, you didn't have great chances at, that goes Power 5 but doesn't play in a year, doesn't like his coach or doesn't like the place or, you know, whatever it is, wants to come closer back to home, can't stand being away from his mom or, you know, shoot, sometimes it's crazy as his girl or dad for too long. Like, and they want to come back closer to home. Well, hey brother, I'm still the same guy. We still got the same stuff coming. Come on. And you can't talk to him beforehand, but you know, it's a crazy profession and they'll get in that portal. You'll hit them up. And if you got a relationship from a year prior, you know, you might be able to get a guy that you didn't think you had a chance at or thought was gone.
Yeah, the transfer portal, say that three times fast, is in college football is like the wild, wild west almost right now. Like in the last 24 hours, Oklahoma, for instance, I'm not sure if you've followed a lot of things that have been going on there, but they've lost Spencer Rattler, who came in as a preseason Heisman Trophy candidate, transferring out. Hazelwood is his last name.
That's the wide receiver. Yep.
Yeah,
the wide receiver he's from Atlanta.
And the crazy thing is, he was in the Army All American game with our David Bell at the same time. I think he was like the top wide receiver in the nation that year as well. Oh man, he's talented. Is he better than David Bell? I don't think so. I mean, David
Bell, questionable.
David Bell. D Bell, what I call is, you know, we don't address him as just David Bell anymore. We call him Biletnikoff Award finalist David Bell. Okay, that's what his name is until further notice. Hopefully, we'll have the winner, David Bell, on that. But we're gonna wait the awards and everything like that. We're gonna wait for it to come through. But I mean, they're losing all these guys right now because Lincoln Riley leaves all of a sudden, which I think is a crazy move. And I'll get into that later. But the transfer portal, all these guys going and going. Some people have entered the transfer portal twice already, and they've only been in college 2 years. Like,
and that's, yeah. I don't get that part. Not to cut you off. My bad. No, I didn't mean to cut you off. I never understand that because, and I probably should be better, but I always go through compliance and those guys, but you got guys transferring that don't quite understand the rules. And like some of these guys are going to have to sit. Like, unless you go down or unless you're graduating, like you said, they've been in college 2 years and they're transferring, you know, a second time. Like, it's a one-time transfer rule. Like that is the rule. Now, you can get waivers and different things like that, but shoot, I've been through that waiver process. I got a waiver to be a graduate transfer, you know, way before all this happened. And that stuff it's risky business because you leaving your ability to play a year or however many years you got left, however much you're gambling with, you know, for most of these guys, they just got to sit one or they get to be immediately eligible. Like, you're leaving that up to NCAA, which, you know, could go either way.
It could definitely go either way. And I think last year there was a record number of transfers, and this year is probably going to break that record again. And speaking of transfers, like you said about yourself, you started off your career at Dayton. Then I believe you were you a walk-on at IU originally?
Yeah.
You earned your scholarship. Yep. Big Ten, yep. D1, all right. Graduate transferred out, got your degree from IU. Graduated, went to West Kentucky, the better university. Okay, cream and crimson. Okay, West Kentucky colors. Okay, Bowling Green. That's where it is. So you went down there, had a great amount of success with the program down there. But like, a lot of people don't understand what you went through. The experience ain't always going to be the same. Some people, you know, transfer and have. They do have success, but then there's other people, like I mentioned before, some guys already been in a transfer portal two or three times already, and it's a nightmare for them, and it is really kills their love for the game of football because they keep jumping from one place, not letting them grow in one spot, I think is the one bad thing that players do to themselves.
Yeah, I think, really, in all honesty, just the culture it creates isn't very good because you get a lot of these young men that's getting terrible advice. I mean, terrible advice, and they're not always aware of where they are. Like, you know, for instance, you get a player to ask me not too long ago, you know, what I thought about, you know, him going into the portal. Okay. Now, once again, you want to be honest with them. That's why they probably respect you enough to ask. You are a D tackle that was a JUCO guy that came here and hasn't had very much production. Where do you think you're going to go from here? Like, who's going to take you? Now, if you're a guy that has a lot of production and you got size to speed ratio that is attractive to most people, because nobody wants to leave and go lower. They all want to leave and go higher. Like, they want to go to a better school. So, like, you have to prove that your play is that doesn't necessarily belong here, or you know what I mean? Like, or I wouldn't even say that belongs there, belongs at what's perceived as a higher level where you're trying to go, you know, not because, I mean, we got good players here, you know, but people don't always understand where they are. And it's crazy because that same confidence they have in themselves is what allows them to go on and achieve so much because they believe in themselves. But at the same time, that can cloud the judgment of whether they should gamble with that portal or not, because it really is a gamble.
It definitely is.
You know, most of them don't find homes. And nowadays, I don't even know if most people know this, but like, so you get a guy in your program that wants to get into the portal. A lot of those guys' scholarships, you know, are getting, they're not getting cut off right then and there, but the next semester, the next year, depending on who you are, you know, and that's not always fair, but it's true. You know, if you a guy we need and come back, we might give you a little time to see if you want to come back. But most guys that are guys, you know, don't really leave. Now that's changing, but they don't have scholarships, so they just go home.
There are top talents that are going to be able to land. Like we talked about Spencer Rattler. No program in the country is going to turn down a guy like Spencer Rattler coming in, a quarterback that can fling it, a quarterback that can run, make all kinds of moves, a quarterback that's won. I mean, dang, Oklahoma wasn't in the big, I can't think of, they won a major bowl game last year. And like, yeah, no, nobody's going to turn him down coming into a program. Now, the guy that was the third string quarterback at Ohio State that has read is transferring out, you know, he's probably a freshman, but he was probably a highly recruited guy. So he may have an opportunity to go transfer to a high level program, but guys that have been in a program for 2 or 3 years, an offensive lineman that, you know, he may have had an injury. He may have not played well when he got in there. You know, he can hit the transfer portal, but it's not going to look so bright for him at a lot of different places. A lot of guys are like, hey, you know what? We don't want to take the time on you. We got other recruits coming in as well. That's what a lot of people don't take into consideration. There's always another wave of guys coming into the pipe. There's always another wave. And so, like, I'm just like, man, some of these guys, you know, best of luck to them. I wouldn't want to jump into that monster wholeheartedly. Like, I think that the saying is grass isn't always greener on the other side. And some of these guys find that out real quick.
And the tough part is, it's just, and see, now they just passed a rule that, you know, for, I think it's up to 7 guys that get in the portal from your program, you can get those 7 scholarships back in initials, which is like unreal, because now it's like, okay, you got your 85, that's like some real roster management stuff, but you know, you only get like 25 initials, where if you get, you know, however many people keep getting in that portal up to 7, you can get some of those initial scholarships back, which, you know, is just, yeah, which is just, now not everybody signs, you know, up to 25 guys every class, and some people do, and everybody got different, you know, roster management philosophies and stuff like that. But I say that to say that just is more, I guess, of a slippery slope for some of these guys that decide to get in that portal, because now it's like, oh, you leaving? Nah, don't even worry about it. Like, as soon as you get in that portal, ain't no coming back, because I get that initial back. And the whole thing is, like you're saying, there's certain positions that have a better shot in the portal. Mm-hmm. Like if you're a big old lineman, like, the good Lord just don't make that many 6'5", 6'6", guys.
Can't coach height.
Come on.
Can't coach height.
Like, you can't. Like, there's just not that many of them. So, my bad.
You good. I don't even know what the score is. 7-3.
I don't even, yeah, it's 7-3, but it just clicked, my speaker clicked over and it turned the TV volume on. But yeah, like, you know, some of those guys are going to have a better shot, you know, and then it just depends on your level. Like, you know, I was at VMI for a couple of years and, you know, however you take it, there's different talent at different levels. It's just it is what it is. That's why you don't have, you know, a full season or a conference made up of, you know, FCS teams in the top four teams and in, going into the national championship here in a week. So like it's different levels, like it is. So the talent goes along with that. And I'll say this. So VMI is the FCS program. They've done a really good job during the last few years. They've got guys hopping in the portal, offensive linemen, getting offers. Like literally, I just seen this guy who I know the player, my Twitter pop up in the transfer portal alerts. He just got a couple offers, like, and I think he just committed to one. But like those guys are gonna have bigger and better chances and opportunities because like there's just not that many of them that are good or that have that size that can move like that. Like there's just not that many people. But like receivers and running backs and DBs, like unless you long and size and speed says, you know, you may be a power five position profile, you know, what does your production say? And even a lot of times, you know, your production is going to override everything because these coaches are going to do their homework. They call, like I had, shoot, I was on the phone this morning. You know, somebody called me about a player from our team that was in the portal. Do we want him? What do you think about him? Like, so you can't run from, you know, some of the things that, you know, the reasons these guys get in the portal. Like, you gotta be smart. Like if you weren't a good player, you know, where you are, you know, people aren't going to assume that you're just going to be a great player at the next school or at their school. Like, you know, it's just how it goes.
One thing I thought was interesting, and you can explain this rule with me. Well, first, you mentioned initial scholarships. Can you explain a little bit more of that to people that may be listening that don't know what initial scholarships mean?
So initial scholarships, everybody usually gets up to 25 initials. So that means in any given class, recruiting class, regardless of, you know, whatever's going on, you can only sign up to 25 players, okay, regardless of position. So like, you know, when you're trying to better your roster, you know, that is a very important thing. So if you can get more initials, that's just one or two more guys that you can bring in to help improve your program. You know, and those could be high school guys, those could be JUCO guys, they could be transfer guys. It's just when you say initial, it's like they just got here and they're put on scholarship. So it's just an initial scholarship. Okay. They count to that number. You know, if they're there and they pay their own way for a semester or two or whatever, then they get put on scholarship. Sometimes they don't always count as initials when that happens. So
is there a limit to the number of transfer players a program can bring in?
Not that I know of. I know some schools and administrations will, you know, put numbers on themselves just because of the type of culture and what they want to have there, but not really. I don't think there's an NCAA rule, okay, for transfers or anything. It's just kind of hard to live in that world because most of those guys, well, now it's different because you got the portal, so you can get a guy to transfer in with multiple years. But, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, if you built on transfers, like, you know, one, there's always a reason guys are transferring. Two, like, it's kind of hard to build a culture that's sustainable because, you know, usually those guys were coming in with 1 year left, 2 years left. So you don't have any faces that grow up in the culture, sure, and enforce the culture because you want the culture to drive itself eventually. Correct. If you have that much time. So that's why when you get them young guys in and they don't know any different, they ain't been to two or three schools where they did it this way and they did it that way. And I like how they did it. And everybody got a bunch of opinions and different and are buying in and may or may not buy into the culture. With them young guys, them 18-year-olds, they don't know. They have no reference. So whatever culture you put them in, you know, usually they soak it up. They're like a sponge, and then they can drive the culture, which is what you really want. Whereas, you know, these the older guys that are coming in 1 or 2 years, like they may buy in, they may not buy in, and either way, they out of there in a year or two.
It's real interesting. I was listening to somebody, a sports talk show, talking. You know, guy was like, you know, if I was Mike Tomlin, if USC were to give me $10, $12 million, I would think about it, and then I would go out there to USC and live in the sun, and, you know, I wouldn't even worry about recruiting. I would just use a transfer portal. And the guy was like, that's not going to work. You can't live and die by the transfer portal, because that's you will more or less die than anything, because you have to establish and build your own culture that's going to make people want to come in and stay. And it's like you can't live and die by it. Now, if somebody can find 5, 6, 7 guys to transfer into your program and really buy in, and they're young guys and make they make plays happen early for the team and often, then by all means, good for them, happy for them. But that's going to be an exception to the rule and not the rule, I feel like.
Yeah. And the one thing that kind of will drive it, though, the portal, is the fact that when you get all these group of five schools, because now all of a sudden you can get a guy that you couldn't have gotten out of high school. So, like, that guy that went Power 5 and he went there and he sat the bench and, you know, he was disgruntled and he ain't feeling it.
Or there was a coaching change.
Or there was a culture change. You can get that guy now. Like, he want to come home. You can get that guy. You wasn't getting him out of high school because, you know, you wasn't the prettiest girl in the room at that point in time. Like, it wasn't happening for you. You know, you might have loved him and was going, put him in, use his skills and put him on a position to be successful just as much as anybody else. But you didn't have all the bells and whistles, because it's truly a difference.
And now you look like the girl sitting next to the punch bowl as the night's being raided. And he's like, hey, you know what? What's up, girl?
You start to get more and more attractive as time goes on.
Exactly.
It's crazy how that works. But
we're gonna talk about that after hours. You know, that's an after conversation for you.
But that's what's gonna drive it, is because all these group of five guys can get better talent than they would normally get out of high school, and then even at the Power 5 level, they're getting it may be messed up sometimes. But you'd rather have a guy that's been lit, he's been in a college program at a high level, than take this high school player that who knows what he's being coached and who knows what, you know, his weight program looked like, or, you know, like, you just don't know all the time. And that's why you got to do your homework either way, whether you're in a portal or you're in college, or I'm sorry, going out of high school. So you got to do your homework. There's good high school programs and there's bad ones. Same with colleges.
Correct. There's, for every Warren, there's a Ben Davis. So when it comes yes, to when it comes to recruiting with you, because like you've recruited all over the area, recruited in our backyard, in Virginia and Ohio, all over. Have you ever been burned, not by a recruit, by a coach of that program that said to you, you know what? I'm not going to mess with them no more.
Not to that extent, but once again, like, you just got to be as thorough as you can, because, like, I mean, these coaches, like, their job is to get high school players into college. It's just what it is. Like, they literally, you know, they're not putting guys into college. Some of these guys, you know, they got message boards for their high schools and stuff like that. They'll get them out of there too. So I've had a high school coach literally ask me, hey, man, can you come talk to this kid? He's like, you know, playing with his mom and everybody, you know, they've been on me just about letting him see coaches. And I'm like, man, I don't mind. You know, you helping me by, you know, giving me all this information, all this other stuff. So, sure, I'll say what's up. But, you know, and it's literally like they got to cover their behind too. So, you know, you just got to do your homework, because they're going to sell you some stuff. And some of them sell you, you know, really good players, and some of them sell you garbage, you know, not that they're garbage, but, you know, less talented players.
I get that.
So I never been burned to that extent though, but if it don't add up, you'll know. And you just got to understand where they coming from. And if they constantly, stuff's constantly not adding up, you know, you, you may not mess with them as much. But the whole thing is, though, now it's really becoming a different time. My bad, kid. Did I lose you?
Good. No, you good. I got you.
But now it's really a different time just because like you used to have to go through the high school coach. Now you kind of go through them more as just, you know, a respect thing, because with Twitter and all that, I mean, you can reach a kid like that. Like, it don't take much to reach a kid. So, you would. Go ahead.
You're looking at their film on Huddle, or I know Mr. Have you seen the Mr. Go 30 videos?
Yeah, Coach 30. Yeah, Coach 30. Comical.
He just put one out on Howard. I got to see that after I'm done here. But yeah. I know he talks about the Air app, so I don't know if that's something that you use for recruiting or what. But I know Huddle has been a big thing for over a decade now, so I'm sure it's what you guys probably mainly use to watch highlights.
Yeah, we use Huddle, and I mean it's some. The higher you go in terms of levels, like some of the resources they have, because it's different. You know, everybody has a little recruiting service. Like some of them are just to get you names, some of them are to get you the film. Like it's crazy how complex it actually is. But Huddle, I've used ZCruit before. Those are some good people over there. And that's kind of, you know, some people have recruit.co, and a lot of it's based on how much you can afford as an institution. So, you know, some people can't afford recruit.co. So, you know, you might holler at another coach, hey man, let me get that login. Because some of it's just who has the most information on the guy. Because like recruit.co, they'll have the camp film. Remember the old Rivals camps?
Oh man.
Oh, they'll have the camp film on there. So like you talk about being able to evaluate. You're watching the guy bend, you see his body type and all that stuff. So, you know, up close, like you're standing there watching the drill. ZCruit, I believe they partner with a couple of different camps. But yeah, man, we use all those. I don't really know much about the Air app. I think some people gave me a card when I was at the Youngstown State Camp. And I think it may have been something similar to the Air app, but they're trying to get some different things like that going, and they'll probably catch on here soon.
Now, this season, like, walk me through. Okay, so you guys, let's say before we get to Maction, let's say it's a normal college football week, game on a Saturday and stuff like that. You got a home game. Okay. Mm-hmm. Leading up to that, walk me through what a normal week would be like with you when it comes to practice, recruiting, maybe having to go out on the road as well. What is that normal week like for you as a college football coach?
Okay. Usually, we played on Saturday. So Sunday, you got to come in, review the film. Usually, you know, you need some quiet time to do that. So whatever time you may have to get together as a staff at 9 or 10 or whatever, just kind of depends on who you work for. So you'll come in a few hours earlier, however much time you need, review the film, get your grades right, put all that stuff together. Then y'all will meet on it. You know, maybe it's off O&D staff, maybe it's full staff. Everybody get on the same page, you know, understand what we need to get corrected. At some point in time, the players will come in. Usually everybody's schedule is a little different. You know, it depends on what day of the week you give them off. So you have to give them one off, whether it's Sunday or Monday. So that may dictate when you talk to them about the game. So that's that. Then, I mean, as soon as that happens, like as soon as everybody's on the same page, you process that and it's over. Like it is 100% all efforts on the next opponent. So you start doing the breakdown. You may watch a game. You may start watching it by formations. Situations probably come a little later in the week, but you getting your thoughts down, what we think we can be successful at running against them, what they do, who they are, trying to get a beat on all their tendencies, all that stuff. So once again, depending on which day you practice, you know, you're gonna have to have some stuff ready for the players whenever they have their first intro. So obviously you got to cover the last game, review that with them, flush it, and then it's usually an intro to the next opponent that follows, whether that's Sunday or Monday. And so, all right, you move on to the next day. Now you're starting to get, you know, finalize your first and second down, game plan thoughts, your control down. So that's like not, you know, open field, not red zone, not third down, not like in the game or in the half. So trying to get basically your meat and potatoes of your game plan down.
And you're an offensive coach. I don't think I said that. You're an offense. I know you coached running backs and tight ends this year, was it?
No, I just coached running backs.
Okay.
And I actually ended up, I called the last game we played, but that's kind of all I've done here is just running backs. And then I called the last game.
Okay.
But
continue then, my fault.
But yep, so we'll do the, you know, the control downs, first, second down. Then, you know, you may practice. You got to get ready for practice. So you'll script some things. You'll get the defenses on there if you're on offense or vice versa if you're on defense. You go through that. You got to watch that film. Then, you know, as soon as you watch that film, you're starting to get into your situation. So your third down game plan, your red zone, your, you know, after that, that's kind of one day. I kind of push you through a day so then you can get ready for the next practice. So you'll start doing some third down stuff, some situational work, whether it's red zone. And then, you know, after that, you kind of get into your 2 minute, 4 minute in the game, whatever, you know, whichever situation you have to spend more time on or whichever comes up first. You know, some people will game plan their 2 minute and keep it the same every week. And that's just what they do in 2 minute. Other people, you know, we'll scheme it up for the team every week. It's kind of two schools of thoughts there. But whatever you do, you got that. Then, you know, you'll practice, review that practice. And then after that, you know, you're just kind of trying to get you're trying to tweak it. You know, what did we like? We're throwing that out. Didn't look good. I think we may be able to get this. Because the whole time you're still watching film, you're still getting a better feel for who these guys are. So different ideas pop in your head. And you see if it's feasible for y'all to do or not, and whoever's got the final say will make that call and you move on. And then, so eventually you'll get to, I basically just cover pretty much, you know, Sunday or Monday, whichever you have, your first practice, which for us was Tuesday, that was our control downs, Wednesday, which would have been our third down situations. So now you're pushing it into Thursday, you're probably trying to lighten the load. You're hitting some of, you know, each scenario, whether it's base downs, in situations, third down, red area, together in practice. We actually walk through on Thursdays a day, so you may not have had that many plays. So that's a whole nother different struggle, is just how much you can get in each practice. So you may not be able to get every third down call repped or every base down play repped. So, you know, it kind of gets pushed later into the week, or you get it in different ways. I may not be able to get it as a team, all 11, but I got it on run on cards with the running backs, the tight ends, and the offensive linemen. But the receivers, you know, they didn't hear and run that play, but all they're going to be doing is blocking, or they run a little, you know, RPO or something. Yeah. So you're just trying to find different ways to get it. So then whether you walk through Thursday or Friday, you'll walk through, and it's usually, you know, base play situations, like I was saying. Then you get to Friday where you kind of, you'll hit just about everything you need to. In each situation, you might hit some coming out. If you get backed up, you know, they pin a punt back deep, you got to hit coming out. You may hit like your victory, your Hail Mary, or, you know, a trick play. If you back, you know, like Boise, everybody runs Boise or some version of it. You know what I'm talking about?
Statue of Liberty, hook and ladder.
Hook and ladder stuff, more stuff like that. Like where it's like desperation. Some people call it desperado. They got a little play they run if they need to pitch the ball back, stuff like that. Just because, you know, you don't really get to see those situations all the time, but in the event you do see them, you usually want to touch up on them every so often, just because
I get that.
Very, very, very critical.
Because you never know what situation may cause for in the game.
You never know. And those in particular are ones that truly win and lose you the game. So you got to be tight. Guys got to at least at a minimum know what they're doing and where they're supposed to be and understand what we're trying to get done. And then after that, you know, that pushes you right into Saturday. It's the game.
Yep. So I from the sound of things, it sounds like you only get a chance to hit the road when you don't have a game that week. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. So I didn't even touch on that for the most part, but as recruiting pertains, throughout the week, you know, Sundays are big because, you know, depending on y'all setup, y'all schedule, you can get some evening calls in. and you know they're probably not practicing, stuff like that, you can call. You know, you really just got to find time. You know, whatever your schedule is, however you work best, you have to find time to call them, to text them. You know, you may be able to text them, you know, in the middle of the day, or text them in the morning, hit them with a little motivational or stuff like that. You just got to know, you know, whatever that guy likes and whatever fits your schedule. Now the calls, you know, those usually happen like late, you know. Now, but if you grind it, if you, y'all in meetings until, you know, midnight, you know, depending on who you work for, they may not mind if you step out 5-10 minutes to talk to a recruit that y'all are interested in. Some people, it's a no phones, like, we in here, we got to get this done. So you just got to find out based on who you're working with and what your schedule is, when you could talk to them. As far as going on the road, if it's a home game, usually you can get out, you know, hopefully in the surrounding areas. You never really want to go too far outside of maybe, you know, 2.5, but it just depends, because, like, what time do y'all practice? Y'all practice in the morning, it's not bad because you can practice and you can hurry up, you know, maybe hit one school close by, see a game for about, you know, half the game and try to get back home. Because, like, for instance, at VMI, I recruited Virginia Beach. We're about 3.5 hours from the beach. I would leave. Yeah. I would either leave Friday morning. I wake up really, really early and leave that morning, hit a couple schools, watch one half of a game, and come back. And I wouldn't be gone. I wouldn't get back until like midnight. Mm-hmm. And then, but then, you know, sometimes I could leave on Thursday, sleep close by whatever school was, then hit it. But still, though, you know, the high school game ain't starting till 7. So you watch a half, wherever you are, you got to get back. So, you know, you still a long day. But, you know, that's usually how that works. You know, some places you can leave, you know, the day. So you'll miss, like, your Friday practice. Other times you can, you know, it might be down the street. You know, you do Friday practice, everything, go down the street, see the guy play. So it just kind of, it's all situational. And when you get those open dates, that's when you might leave. So, like, for the instance, during our bye this year, I went to Iowa and did the Iowa JUCOs. Okay. So I left.
Was it Iowa Western
Iowa Western, Iowa Central, and Ellsworth. Yep, Ellsworth. So I hit the Iowa JUCOs, and that was, I think I left like the Tuesday that week and got back. No, I was gone. I left Sunday, got back Tuesday or Wednesday, I believe. So, you know, it just depends on where they're trying to send you and what exactly you got to get done. You know, sometimes you just, you know, they want you to see one or two. You can't really see the players, but they want you to see one or two guys play. Or go get, you know, go to the school and touch base with the coach and get transcripts, and just depends. So, but that's kind of a few scenarios of what that could look like.
I get that. That's very interesting. Now, when you were at Western, you played for Coach Brom.
Mm-hmm.
And who was the coach? I thought it was another coach you played for there.
The offensive coordinator was Tyson Helton. The defensive coordinator was Nick Holt. So, those guys were there.
I was thinking, who was the guy that took the FSU job after?
No, I wasn't there with Taggart. I was.
Yeah, Coach Taggart. Duh, Corey.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I wasn't there.
The man's name is only on the stadium.
Yep.
So you were there under Coach Brom.
Yep.
Had some great success, like I said before. Has it surprised you to see the success that he's had at Purdue in the 2 or 3? No, I think he's been there like 4 or 5 seasons now.
I think he's been at 4. I think he's been at least 4.
Well,
he beat
Ohio State in 2018, I think. Mm-hmm. It was 2018 because David wasn't there yet. So that was the year Rondell went off in 2018. Yep. 2019, I don't think they played him. 2020, they didn't play him. This year, no, it was 2019, they played him again and they lost. But basically, you know, they've had some really good teams there. Obviously, you think they're you're bowl eligible this year. But has it surprised you to see him have the success that he's had after being your former head coach there at Western?
No, man. Those guys are pretty smart, creative. I mean, that system they run, like, I mean, they just – he just has a way of seeing it and calling it where he just does a really good job. Like, because I also GA, so my first year GN was under Brian, and he left the next year. But, they do a good job. He just finds ways to put, you know, players in position to succeed. And it don't help when – I would say it does help when you got good players like Rondell Moore, like just special, like yeah. Special guy. That's why he's in the NFL. Like David Bell, special. Like he's right. Gonna be in the NFL. Like when you got those caliber of players, like it helps. And I know, you know, at Purdue, you know, people they haven't been, you know, overly successful prior to getting there, but you know, they just find a way. And it's, you know, when they invest as much as they did in their facilities and their coaching pool, like you're gonna get, you know, what people will say are better coaches and at least, you know, they probably got the experience to warrant that amount of pay, which comes with more knowledge, which, you know, the kids usually benefit from. And the facilities, are you going to be able to get other players? Cause now you can compete with somebody who has really, really top of the line, you know, really good top of the line facility. So, you know, they made an investment and I got the utmost respect for him because I seen him work and he's smart and creative. So it don't surprise me at all.
That's really great to hear. Have you talked to him lately?
I haven't talked to him in a while. I'm trying to think the last time. I actually was at Purdue not too long ago, probably a couple of years ago, and I saw him. And, you know, he smiled, chopped it up with him for a second, and they took good care of me. I was just visiting, trying to get some knowledge. I know quite a few of those guys in that building. And, you know, it was all love and, you know, they showed me a good time in terms of just learning some things they were doing, helping me out, and then just seeing them practice and stuff. So nah, that's probably, I haven't talked to him probably in at least over a year, but you know, sometimes in this coaching thing, like it's crazy because it's all about relationships, but you got some people mm-hmm. you'll talk to all the time, every week. And then you got others where it's like, man, I'll see you at the convention.
I think you're going to San Antonio in a couple of weeks.
I am.
I want to go. I miss those conventions. Those are fun.
Yeah.
Those are fun. I got a story I'll tell you off air about that one. So college football right now is crazy, like I said. What do you think is going to happen with the playoff this year? And do you see the playoff expanding past four in the next 3 to 4 years?
I don't know, man. I think they would try to expand it. You're just gonna add more weeks. They would have to start it earlier, which would be interesting.
I'm fine with them cutting out games too. I'm completely fine with them cutting out games. Make it a 12 game season now, cut it down to 10. Start earlier if you had to. I know there was something I heard about they want to expand to 12. That way they can get all the New Year's Six bowls in and then have everything else, you know, that's not a bowl that's part of them. You know, they still had those for the other teams that aren't in the playoff. But I think 12, instead of going from 4 to 8, which I think is a little bit more feasible right away. They go from 4 to 12, then that allows all the bowl games. Cause this year it's just the Orange Bowl. And I think the Cotton Bowl, then the national championship in Indianapolis. If you expand it to where it was all the New Year's Six, that's the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl. And then, God dang, what's another one I'm missing?
You said Orange, you said Rose, you said Fiesta, you said Cotton.
The Sugar Bowl is in
Sugar.
Chick-fil-A Bowl, I think, is the other New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah, that one kind of came, I don't know which one, because it's like the PlayStation. I remember it as the PlayStation Bowl, but Chick-fil-A, yeah. Yeah, they got so many bowl games.
That's in Georgia. Yeah, I got it pulled up right here. Hold on. It's the Peach Bowl.
Peach. How can we not remember that one?
Because it's in Georgia, peaches and stuff like that. But that gives those six major bowl games opportunity to still be in the playoff. And then that brings in more money, more revenue. And then I think I truly feel like it will really give us a real deal college football playoff, similar to what we have at the FCS level and everywhere else that plays college football or football, period. Because right now it's too much like an invitational, AD. There's no standard. There's no, like, if here's a crazy thing, all right? If Ohio State had won against Michigan, which thankfully they didn't, they were going to go to the Big Ten Championship. They were going to walk all over whoever they faced. Georgia and Alabama were probably going to be it if they were undefeated, or if Alabama beats Georgia, both of them were getting in. So that's three schools right there, all right?
Yeah.
And then you have, let's say Clemson was undefeated this year as well, okay? So then that's, boom, that's four teams right there that are going to make it, and nobody else is even going to get a shot. And a team like Cincinnati, you know, they did everything they could to win all their games. They won them all. It's not going to get a shot. Matter of fact, it happened.
UCF
had every right to be in the playoff, had beaten two SEC teams that year, went undefeated, didn't get a shot. And thankfully, you know, somebody recognized them as national champions, so they get to hang that banner up. So that's good for them. But, you know, too many schools are shut out because there's no complete standard on, you know, what you have to do to make it to the playoff. It's like everybody saying, hey, we feel you guys are the four best teams. Well, what about us? We won all of our games. Well, hey, we don't care about you guys. Well, dang, man, that's not fair. And I want this to be as fair as possible for the teams, for the players, for these organizations to have the opportunity to compete. Because granted, here's one thing I know they were going to do. If Notre Dame was undefeated this year, and it was a two-loss Alabama team, if Notre Dame was undefeated, Notre Dame's getting that spot, which is not fair to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, though, because not too long ago, we had the BCS system, which was you talk about a standard. It was a legitimate standard with a formula based on, you know, difficulty of schedule, point score, all this stuff, and nobody liked that either, because we got some computer telling us who is the best teams and who should get to play for the national championship, and we end up with this, and all right, now it's not a computer, now it's just all these guys that have been involved in football their entire lives and seen all this ball, so now ain't no computer, we just gonna give it to them. We got wins, losses, difficulty of schedule, and they get to go in a closed door meeting every week and make decisions on who should be in there.
Well, my biggest problem, AD, is what I have is they're putting guys that know college football in it, but they aren't putting everybody on that committee doesn't know college. What does Condoleezza Rice know about Auburn SEC football? She ain't watching it. She on the West Coast. She worried about Stanford and them. You know, she needs to be worried about politics. Get out of my college football. All right, we don't need you in there. We don't need people that don't live this. Like I was saying on Twitter the other day, it's like I watched the rivalry week games from noon with Michigan, Ohio State to the last game I watched was BYU, USC. There was no stop in between. I was watching all them games, right? I'm watching Virginia Tech beat Virginia. And then in between that game, I'm flipping back and forth to the Iron Bowl. And I'm watching Purdue versus IU. I watched Minnesota versus Wisconsin. I watched Iowa and Nebraska the night before. Like, there are guys like me that live and breathe this stuff that would have much better idea of who to put in the playoff than some of these big wig guys that are just in it because they got name recognition. That's all it is.
I think they do have to watch like a certain amount. Like, there's a reason they're there. I don't know all the reasons because I'm not worthy enough, I guess, to be in the committee. Nobody's asked me yet. But like they I do know they do watch a lot of these final games. Like I'm sure because they'll show it on TV. So they have some frame of reference, but nobody's ever probably gonna be, you know, fully, you know, embracing the format that they pick the teams. You know, if they do go to expand at 12, I do like this thought of like getting all the New Year's Six games in and potentially even having a lot more teams have a chance to win. The one thing that makes it tough though is now, you know, all right, well, that team, you know, that Cincinnati team now gets to play in, but I mean, how many games are we asking these young men to play now? You know what I mean? Like, but then, okay, you want to shorten the 12 game season. Well, all right, well, everybody ain't going to be for that because you either got to cut out conference games, which give you a chance to win conference titles, or you got to cut out non-conference games, which unless you are a Power Five team, those non-conference games support your entire athletic department. Everybody. Like, we went and played Ohio State, we went and played Auburn. And,
I get, you know, that.
As much as we all like to think it's for the spirit of the sport, there's a business side to that.
I get that. Maybe you cut the conference games down.
But the only tough part about that is, well, now, like, I mean, how many teams do you really have to beat in your conference to be a conference championship?
Yeah, that's true as well, because, I mean, you see with the SEC, they're going to 14, 16 teams when they add Texas and Oklahoma. Big Ten, no, I'm surprised they didn't try to expand as well, but they got – Big Ten got 14 teams. Make that make sense.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
It's crazy. So, yeah, you do have a solid point.
It's a lot to it.
It is a lot to it. Now, I think it's lately with the teams that go to the playoff will play 15 games, I believe, is what they'll look at. But you have to also think that if they play 12, a 12-game regular season, they play the conference championship, that's 13. They play in the first round of the playoff, that's 14. They make it to the national championship, that's 15. But that's only 2 out of 200 teams that are making – they're playing 15 games. And even so, maybe if you expand to 12, that's probably – that's 12 or 13 teams or 12 teams that are playing 13 games, 14 games maybe. So I think that is a, you know, a give and take that I think it'll be worth it. And plus, like you said, with money-wise, that's more money for the conferences to dole out amongst their members that go and play in it. You know, some of these conferences will all get automatic bids. And then group of five conferences, Conference USA, Athletic, Mountain West, they get an automatic bid as well. And then you get some at-large teams. And if there's a team that doesn't get it from there, then – no, it's tough for you. It's tough for you.
Yeah.
Better next year. But college football is tough. It's a sport that we all love, obviously, because we wouldn't sit here and dedicate so much of our life to it if it wasn't, right?
Yep.
Now, go ahead.
It's interesting. And they have a lot. But if they can figure out a way to get it to make sense from a scheduling standpoint, and not water down the conference play, because at the end of the day, like, there's a lot of revenue to be generated from, you know, TV money and all these games. You know, it'd be cool if they could get that number up. I just, you know, how they do it, it's going to be real critical, because you can't really mess with too many of the out of conference games, because too many teams support their entire athletic department. Like water, you know, women's water polo. Anybody that's ever been to college, like, you know, I would ask them how much they paid to go to the men or women's soccer game. Probably paid $10. Like, you know, if that, you know, the men and women, or the women's softball or the men's baseball game, like how much was paid, you know, basketball or football programs usually go out there and make a lot of money for the rest of the department. you know, that's the rifle team, the bowling, that's all of them. So, and it impacts a lot of people. So they still got to preserve the ability to make, you know, make the athletic department money for all those other teams and students that devote, you know, their lives to their sport. And then
I get,
you know,
that
make it make sense.
I get that. So it's tough.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, I wouldn't want to be in the shoes of some of these athletic directors and some of these programs across the country, especially the guys at Oklahoma and Florida and all these other places that got to replace coaches here. One of the last things, or actually two of the last things I want to ask you about. I'm sitting here and I appreciate you talking with me too. I could talk to you about so much. You said this past week you had the opportunity to call an offense. What was that experience like for you?
It was a great learning experience, man. It just, because you think you, okay, so as an assistant, you know, you're going to drop your little plays, your suggestions, you know, yeah, I thought about this, they do that, we should be good here, we should be good there. But just the amount of information that you're trying to process at the speed that you're trying to process it in the moment of the game, and like that was my first time, so like it was very interesting. It just gives you a true respect for those that do it all the time, week in and week out, and more so just give me like, you know, so much perspective as to, you know, just that level, the next step, you know, just in the culture profession, you know, because it's definitely not as much. It's the time and the speed that you're trying to make sense of everything. And the whole thing is you got all this information, you got adjustments, you got what you saw prior on film, you got what you're seeing now, you got what other people are telling you and suggesting you, which is all very good. You got what's in the game plan, you got what you can get to, and then you got the situation. You got the feel of the game, you know. Okay, the situation may dictate one thing, but we aren't in a position, or maybe, you know, you don't feel great about your ability to take advantage of this situation, which I have for the situation, because, you know, y'all aren't doing a great job at something else. So, we got that. We got this play for this situation, but we aren't doing great at something that's required in this particular play. Do you rely on the situation in the call, or do you feel from, you know, where you're at and what your team is doing and know, like, all right, I got to go to something else that may fit? You know, you usually have a few calls for each situation. So when you're a position coach, you try to think that way. And you give those suggestions based on the scenarios, and you try to help the offense coordinator or the defense coordinator during the game. But it's different when you're the one, you know, making the situation, making the call. So I'm thankful for the opportunity, and you know, I'll learn from it. There's a couple calls I wish I could have had back. There's a couple calls, you know, we knew they were working, and I'm glad we got them out, you know, and I'm glad we're able, you know, to see the success we saw out of them, you know. So some of it, you know, because it's not rocket science, it ain't that hard, but it ain't easy. So, you know, it just gives you some perspective, and, you know, I probably appreciate it more after the fact than when I was in it, because when I was in it, I'm just trying to do my job. Like, that's it. Like, I'm trying to do my job, like, trying to get this in the end zone. You know, you never satisfied. It's an intense moment. And you know, afterwards you could probably like process, like, you know what, that was really good, you know, for me moving forward to be able to build on that experience and carry it forward as we try to make my way through this profession.
It was probably happening for you so quick, you probably didn't understand or recognize it until you was all over with. You were just in the flow, in the rhythm of it, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, I it's crazy because you know me, kid. So like, I'm just trying to go in there and do my job. I'm trying to do what I'm supposed to do. And I don't really think about, you know, a bunch of the fluff or anything like that. Like, it's my job this particular week to find out how to get 11-month young men to move that ball across that goal line. And I got the help of the coaches around me. And, you know, I know this moment's coming. I had, you know, I didn't know until the week before. So I'm going. And like the fluff for the opportunity and all that, like, man, I'm trying to figure out how to get these plays on this paper so we can go out there and operate. What do we need to do? What do we need to have in? Who needs to see what? And it's just so much work that, like, I ain't even thinking, like, you know, yeah, you know it's a good opportunity. You know the experience. And it's like, you know, after you get done, it's just like, all right, you de-stress. And it's like, man, I'm really glad. I'm really thankful I had the opportunity to do that. While you in it, man, it's go. It's grind time. It's literally, you going 100 miles an hour for me every day of the week because it was my first time. So I'm, like, trying to make sure I'm not missing nothing. Trying to make sure everybody's got what they need from me. I got what I need from them. So we can go out here and put on a good showing and give these guys a chance to win. So, yeah, you're right. There are some things you don't gain until afterwards, for sure.
I get that completely. And that's great that you had the opportunity to do that. The interim head coach didn't have to give you that opportunity. He could have gave that to whoever. But it's great that he let a young coach like yourself, a young African-American coach like yourself, that the opportunity to do that. What would you say to others that want to get into coaching, college coaching, that is? What advice would you give them?
More than anything, just lean on your relationships and your connections, because those are the main things that are even going to give you a sliver of an opportunity to get in this thing. Also, just be ready to work, because it's a lot more to it than you think. And when you start off, like, you know, some people are not going to, you know, struggle with this as much as others. Like, just being humble and understanding, like, when you come in, like nobody really cares what you've done or where, you know, who you are. With, like, it's a process. Like, unless you're coming from the league as a veteran or something like that, unless you got that NFL shield on you, you know, or your last name is a certain last name, which most of us don't have the benefit of that. Like, you're going to start off at the bottom and you're going to grind your way to wherever you, however high you can get in this profession, and it'll test you. Like, you got to make sure you want it for the right reasons and it means enough to you, and you're willing to sacrifice, you know, whatever it takes for you to get to where you want to go. And then just understanding, like, you know, see, me, it's easy because I'm single. You know, it's just me. Like, if I want to go somewhere, I just got to figure out how to get everything out of my apartment in the right enough time, and how to get it across the country or whatever. Like, you know, a lot of these coaches, you know, they got, you know, wives and families, like, they got to consider, like, you got to make sure everybody on board. Like, that's another thing. Me not even having that issue or dynamic to navigate through, I see it so often. Like, that's something something I would mention to somebody if they were trying to get in. You know, basically, like, it's all about relationships. Be a good person. Be a sponge. Learn as much as you can. You got to find a balance of how to be confident while being a sponge and learning and all that stuff, and being humble at the same time. And just make sure it's what you're willing. It's really what you're willing to sacrifice for this thing. Make sure it means enough to sacrifice some, because there's different levels. You know, the higher it is, the more it's going to require from you, you know, in a lot of different ways. Time. You know, where's your moral compass? Because now all of a sudden you got a lot more money involved. You got higher stakes. You got a lot, you know, some people say pressure. If you perceive that, you know, some of those things is pressure, a lot more influences, a lot more people talking about what you're doing, you know. So it's like, you know, it's more time. You know, some people will argue the quality of life isn't as great, but it depends on what you value, you know, and because there are some lower level schools where they're working just as hard. You know, there's some other ones where you get to go home every day by 6-7, you know, but what you getting out of that? You know what I mean? Like, are you winning? Like, where are you at? So it's, you know, to sum it up, you know, be ready to work, understand what you're getting yourself into, make sure everybody's on board, be confident, be ready to learn at the same time. So
that's outstanding. You're giving me too much. You're giving us all too much that are going to listen to this, man. AD, I appreciate it, man. Best of luck to you moving forward, my brother. Any Akron Zip gear you got that you want to get rid of, you know, I will take it on.
I got some.
Gladly.
I got some.
Not saying, you know, I always like having some gear for my guys in our schools, man. I need to holler at a couple other guys, too, to get something off of me. I know Nick Temple got some Cincinnati gear somewhere around there hiding from me.
So nah, he ain't coming off none of that. I just talked to him. He ain't coming off none of that right now. They too good. They too hot right now.
Man, for real. For real. For real. But hey, I appreciate you, AD. Like, seriously, man, you're an awesome guy. Even better player, coach than anybody could ever possibly imagine from you coming from the East Side, man. You've put in the hard work, the time, the effort, the sacrifices. Keep that moral code that you have had, and please continue to let it guide you and take you to bigger and better places, brother.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you, kid, man. Keep doing your thing, man. Keep doing your thing.
I'm going to try.
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, Warrior legend Anthony Davis, my man.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
All love, brother.
Thank you, AD. Man, what a great talk. Well, so much info and was given. I hope everybody that listens to this really, really enjoyed that. That was just incredible, you know, to get in-depth information from a guy that's played at a high level, at high school, played at a high level in college, and is now coaching at a high level. You know, that's just it's incredible. And so I wish AD nothing but the best of luck in his future endeavors in coaching, and hopefully in the next 10 years or so, I'm reading about him like I'm reading about, you know, coaches like Mel Tucker or James Franklin or Marcus Freeman or any of these coaches that are getting these big-time college jobs or these big-time college football extensions as a head coach or a position coach or wherever. I know he's going to continue to be very successful, and he's been that way so far. So best of luck to him and everything he's doing. And I also, before I let you guys out of here, I also want to add something here. I did not add Tristan Tonte to college football players update at the beginning of the show. Tristan and the Marion Knights ended their season this past week. A tough loss to, I just had the information up here. Why did I not find it? I promise, guys, I do more. A tough loss to Northwestern College in the NAIA playoffs. There was a second round of the quarterfinals, I should say. And tough loss for the team. But they had a really good year this year. Ending the season, I believe they were 9-3. And Tristan had a really great comeback season. He missed all of last year because of injury. Ended up rushing for, I believe it's over 400 yards this year. Over 400, 455, is it? Is that what it's telling me here? 432 net yards, 4 total touchdowns after coming back from an injury. Very good, man. Tristan has been a great player for the Knights over his career and has helped them get to national championship game 2 seasons ago. Just done some really outstanding work for the Knights. Best of luck to him and everything he's got going on moving forward. Definitely one of the guys I respect. He was a great player for us for a couple years. I mean, that's the reason why I named him to the top 50 list, man. The dude was tough. Outstanding running back. And, you know, he comes from a great wrestling family. He was a state qualifier in wrestling as well. I want to say he was state runner-up. Yeah, state runner-up in wrestling as well. So, I mean, his father, legendary Jim Tonte, who won a state championship here at Warren a few years back. So what more do I need to say than that? But, you know, best of luck to Tristan as well and everything he's got going on moving forward in his career. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that is all. Any more big news coming your way, I will definitely bring it. Be sure to be on the lookout as well. I usually would have started this by now, but the Warriors Choice Awards are still coming. And if you are a new listener to this show, the Warrior Choice Awards is an online award that you had an opportunity to pick the winner of. What it is basically the top plays from the season. I find the best plays. Then we have a tournament. We seed the plays by random usually, and we go from there. And each day you'll be able to vote on a certain play that you felt was the best play from that game, and you'll be able to see if that play move on, that player move on at the end of the year, they get an award. So best of luck to those guys. Last year it was Daniel Tippett's game-winning touchdown pass to Terrez Reed against North Central was voted the top play of the year last year. So I can imagine some plays from Ben Davis may score high, but you never know. You never know. We have some other great plays on the season as well. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, leads us to another great episode of True Warrior Football. I'm your host, Corey the Kid Smith. Warrior Band, take us away.